Herb Adderley has joined us on Sports Byline USA, and again, he is one of only three players in the history of professional football to have played on six world championship teams, and we're talking about his book, Lombardi's Left Side. Tell me a little bit about how you ended up in Dallas. What were the circumstances there, Herb?
Okay, let me just say a little bit about Super Bowl II. Once we got back there, Lombardi had said the same thing that I said. We had played better teams than we're going to face against the Raiders, but he did emphasize the fact that the Raiders were a better team than the Kansas City Chiefs were, and there was no question about it, they were. But the incentive that we had, we knew that Lombardi was coaching us for the last time, that he was going to retire after the game, and we all just felt dedicated and committed to winning Super Bowl II no matter what the circumstances of what happened, and if we went out there and did it. And in that game, I was the first defensive player to score in the history of the Super Bowl. I intercepted a pass and ran it back 60 yards. So getting back to 61, my rookie year, I intercepted a pass in Detroit that I spoke about, and then Lombardi's last game, I was able to pick one, and that record will always stand as being the first one to run an interception back for a touchdown in Super Bowl. Now, getting back to your question about going from Green Bay to Dallas, well, like I said, Lombardi's had zero tolerance for racism and discrimination, and he brought about social change in the city of Green Bay by helping the black players get decent housing in Green Bay, because we couldn't live in Green Bay in the late 50s and early 60s because of the white people didn't want to take a chance on having a black person live next door in the same neighborhood because they never had that before. Lombardi said, this has to change. I have to have my boys to live in decent housing. If they're going to be a part of the team, they got to be a part of the community. He called in the top real estate people and said, listen, we have to find someplace decent for my players. And that's how that all came about, during the civil rights struggles back then and Dr. Martin Luther King and the marching for voting rights and fair housing and this kind of thing. Lombardi quietly did this, integrated the city of Green Bay with black players and families living in the town. And he was also has to be credited with playing more black players than any team in the NFL at that time, because there were only like maybe four or five black players on each team in the NFL, an unwritten quota, and there were certain teams, the Washington Redskins, St. Louis Cardinals, didn't have any black players at all. Lombardi, we started seven black players, which was unheard of, on defense. And this opened the gates for other teams to start drafting black players on both offense and defense, and that's how that all came about. Now, when I went to Dallas, it was almost a cultural shock for me because it was just the opposite. Lombardi would always say ahead of time in the preseason, before practice, training camp, if there's anyone here that don't like black players or white players or Jewish or Italians or Irish, or ethnic groups, or religion, Catholic, Baptist, please come up to my office. I'll get you somewhere else because that will not be tolerated here. Going to Dallas is almost like the opposite. Landry never spoke about anything like that. And there was an article in August 2nd, 1970 Sports Illustrated, done by Tex Small. And the headlines was Racial Trouble in Big D. And he talked about it in a three-page article about the racism on the team in Dallas, where some of the white players admitted that they didn't want to play with the black players because they didn't play against them or with them in college because of the segregation back then in the 50s and 60s. And he talked about Don Perkins, an excellent running back, retiring because he still had 28 years old in his prime. He retired because of the racial situation on the team, and because he couldn't get decent housing. And that's all in the magazine before I got traded there. So when I went there, I knew that there was some racial problems there, but I didn't know to the extent. And I could feel, you know, the racial thing between the players when I got there, that the guys didn't speak to each other in the locker room, and it was, you know, it was obvious that some of the white guys didn't want black players as teammates. And I think one of the worst things that happened, that somebody took a red Sharpie pen, it's in the book, and wrote the N-word on the bulletin board where all of the statistics and everything are posted and all the current news, and it's right there in the front. Everybody can see it when you come in the door. They wrote the N-word and pointed the arrow at Calvin Hill's name because Calvin was leading the league in rushing. And this shocked everybody. And it stayed up there 2 or 3 days. And all the coaches and everybody saw it, and nobody removed it. So that started some real racial tension.
Yeah, Herb, you to be fair, though, you said that you did get positive vibes from some players. Name some of the players that you didn't get a negative vibe from.
Like Bob Lilly, I'd say he was my best friend. He and I also went into the Hall of Fame in the same class in 1980. So Bob Lilly, Roger Staubach, D.D. Lewis, Dave Edwards, Dave Manders, who was a teammate of mine at Michigan State. He was the center on that team. And well, that's about it. It was only a few guys. Steve Kiner, he was a linebacker. Pat Toomey. That's about it. About 7 or 8 white players that I was friendly with.
You also say that this was a trickle-down effect. It wasn't just some of the players. It was a different atmosphere for a black player in Dallas as compared to Green Bay. And you said, I met and knew the wives of all the guys in Green Bay with the exception of Jim Taylor's first wife, Dixie. And she was from the South, and she made it known that she did not want to meet any of the black players. And then you talk about a party at John Nyland's house.
Yeah, well, in Green Bay, we got together after every game. We had, you know, at somebody's house, or either we'd rent a room at the downtown, a motel. And win or lose, I mean, we didn't lose that much in Lambeau. And we would get together as a team and as friends and socialize. But that never happened in Dallas. All the guys would go their own way. Once practice was over, the white players go their way, black players go their way, and the black players had to go on the south side because that's the only place we could find housing in Dallas. And Landry Tex Ram never did anything to help out with housing for the black players. That's one of the reasons Don Perkins quit. And, I heard about the party, and I just said, well, I'm going to stop over here and see, you know, exactly what's going on. And just standing around, you know, I noticed there wasn't any other black players there at the party. And a couple of the wives, I don't know who they were, they came over in maybe 15 minutes apart. And they both said the same thing. Why don't you go over on the south side where your people are? Nobody wants you here. And that was the last party that I attended, any gathering with the entire team. So, you know, that was kind of a shock also. But, I mean, all this was happening. It was just totally different, just the opposite of what was going on in Green Bay.
You also said that Landry underachieved. What did you mean by that, Herb?
I meant that he didn't put the best players on the field. Lombardi played the best players. It didn't matter what color your skin was or religion or ethnic group. He wanted the best players on the field. In Dallas, I saw what was happening, and he did not put the best players on the team. And it had to be because of the color of his skin, because he had some of the white players that was nowhere near as good as some of the black players who were stacked up behind each other at the same position. For example, Bullet Bob Hayes, world's fastest human. Bob could play. He could catch the ball. There were times that Bob would be on the bench and he would have a guy like Ron Sellers, Dennis Holman, Lance Allworth, Lance Rensel, all these guys playing in front of Hayes, and Hayes is a game breaker. So I'm saying he's not injured or hurt. Why is this going on? Let's put the best guy out there. But that happened. And another thing was we had two great running backs, Calvin Hill and Dwayne Thomas. And only one time did those guys play in the same backfield together. They were playing behind each other. But Dan Reeves and Walt Garrison were both injured, so Landry was forced to put both of them in the backfield against the New York Jets, 1971 Texas Stadium. Joe Namath, quarterback. We beat them 52-14 because of Calvin Hill and Dwayne Thomas. They both gained 100 yards rushing, over 100 yards rushing, and pass receiving. The following week, Landry benched both of them and put Garrison and Reeves back out in the game. And these guys are sitting on the bench. And everybody was wanting to say, wait a minute, we got the combination here that we can go undefeated with these guys. And it had to be because of that. And I was a living example of being benched because not my play on the field, not being a distraction in the locker room, not having no problems off the field with the police or anything. I got benched in New York, Yankee Stadium, because Cliff Harris, the free safety, blew the coverage. I left my man and knocked down a potential touchdown pass in the end zone. Landry come over with me at halftime and chew me out in front of the whole team. I thought he was going to congratulate me on making a good play. He chewed me out for not playing the defense. He was telling me, stay with the defense. I said, Coach, when the ball is in the air, the defense is off. He said, no, you do that in Green Bay. We don't do that here. I said, well, I can't play like that. He said, well, you won't play at all. He never said a word to Cliff Harris about blowing the coverage. He replaced me with Charlie Waters, who couldn't play the position. It should have been Mark Washington, who was a drafted cornerback, and he had Mark Washington with the potential better than Cliff Harris and Charlie Waters as athletes playing behind Mel Renfro, where Mel Renfro should have been the free safety. Connell Green should have been the strong safety, which he was. I was the left corner. Mark Washington should have been on the right corner. But Landry didn't want to be the first coach to put four black players in the secondary. So he put Mark Washington behind Renfro and had Charlie Waters and Cliff Harris alternating at the free safety spot. But when I was benched, it wasn't because of my performance on the field. It wasn't because I was distracting, like I say. So the only thing I could figure that he had a vendetta against me because of being an ex-Packer and being black. And that's the reason that I think that I was benched, and I believe that right to the day.
And you also accused Landry of cluing. Now, explain to everybody what cluing was.
Well, he accused me of cluing. He said that I was a cluer. And the best way to put that is on Jeopardy, the show, and I watch that every night because I can learn something. On Jeopardy, they give the contestants clues to try to get the answer. And to me, I was cluing. That was my part of the game in Green Bay because I was an offensive player. I recognized offensive formations, and I knew that there were certain things that they would do off of these formations, like the back coming out of the backfield, or how far the receivers would line up from the sideline or the hash mark. All this was in my mind. And so because of that, my intelligence took me to the right place at the right time. So Landry claimed that I was cluing and that I didn't play the defense. He wanted guys like robots to play the defense no matter what happens. You stay with the defense. And you don't go for the ball when it's in the air. So I'm saying, well, if there's a fumble laying on the ground, am I supposed to stay with the defense and let somebody else come and pick the fumble up? It was the same thing with the pass route, the ball being in the air. So Mel Renfro, Connell Green, the other defensive backs, they always stayed with the defense. And that's the way they were coached and trained because of Landry. When the defense broke down, something happened, well, the players would get the blame. But if the defense worked, well, Landry would take the credit for it. I told you, it's the defense. It doesn't matter who's playing. We can do it. We can implement the defense. It doesn't matter who's in there. But he was wrong. It was almost like coaching robots. You know, you had to have players that could implement it.
We didn't figure it
that way.
We only have a minute left. But what would you like people to take away from this book, Herb?
The main thing is the social thing with Lombardi and his zero tolerance for racism and how he brought together white and black players and molded us into champions and into men and who are still friends. I'm still friends 50 years later with these guys. And to show that how racism can affect a team or a business not being able to reach their potential and to win championships if racial things are involved in playing people because of the color of their skin or because of a religion or whatever and not putting the best players on the field. And the Cowboys lost a lot of games that they should have won because not having the best players on the field because of the color of their skin.
Herb, I want to thank you very much for sharing the story of not only being in Green Bay but also down in Dallas. I urge people to check out this book. It's called Lombardi's Left Side. Congratulations on an outstanding career, and you are welcome back here anytime on Sports Byline.
Well, thank you very much.
Herb Adderley with us on Sports Byline USA, and along with another Packer teammate, left linebacker Dave Robinson. They share what it was like to be in professional football and playing for head coach Vince Lombardi during the 60s. Of course, Herb inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1980. We continue across the country and around the world with you on Sports Byline.